The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 3.
Sanshi Bhagi Jushin Eto Shang Rira Vinshi Nyende Gyanpa Sange Shindu Mithe Guwagi Jogur Nanda Shimla Jubashu Gidam Radamanda Kamiyatayami Sange Chadam Sange Chonama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kapsuchi Dagi Chunyen Bipe Sunanki Drola Penche Sange Chupasho Sange Chudam Sange Chonamba Chanchu Badu Dagni Sushi Dagi Chunyan Dipe Sunangi Jola Penche Sange Jupasho Sange Chudan Sange Chodama Chanchu Badu Dagni Kasuchi Dahi Chunyen Gimpe Sunamgi Yola Penche Sange Jubashu.
Okay, to repeat where we are, we're in Jetsun Kapa's Lekshen Yingbo. Okay, Lekshen Yingbo meaning essence of eloquence. Eloquence meaning something that was taught well or taught intelligently or taught great. And when I learned this subject, when we were in the monastery, they said, it means it's the most important thing that Jetsun Kapa ever wrote. You know. And there's a beautiful story today that Ellie told me. She works at the office of Tibet, or the Tibet Fund. And there's a monk who you may know, Pelden Gyatso was his name, who was in prison for 33 years under the Chinese, and beaten up, smashed, teeth are all gone, you know, tortured for years. And when he escaped with the instruments that they tortured him with, and he testified before Congress and things like that. And he saw what LA was studying, and he said, "You're studying Lekshen Yingbo?" And she said, "Yeah." And he said, and then he started to read the reading, and he freaked out, and he kept holding it up on his head, and then he started reciting it. And he was in jail for 33 years. He never got the full instruction on the text. He memorized it, and he never got the teaching on it. And he was saying, "You guys are lucky, you know." So that's really cool. Like, he was like crying up that somebody in the United States was studying it. So it's really cool. Okay, that's the easy part. Now, I'm going to go over a little bit last time because it was hard. And then I have a question here that someone asked me. Someone asked me to clarify a little bit further the expected answer on your homework about there's a school called Jonangba in Tibet, and they had a wrong idea about emptiness. And Jetsun Kapa, by the way, my teacher, when he taught it, went into a long explanation of why Jetsun Kapa doesn't mention anyone by name. He always says, "Some people said, you know, some Tibetans have said." And it just shows that he's respectful of the other schools. He doesn't want to say outright who it is. And then the commentaries always say who it is, you know. So so he's actually criticizing a school that was current in his time that said two things, okay. And these are contradiction, okay. The first thing they said was that the third turning of the wheel was spoken literally, okay. Buddha meant what he said in the third turning of the wheel. Okay, that's the first thing you need to know. So if you're going to answer the homework question, the first thing would be to say, this school called Jonamba, which still has people following it. There are American Buddhist scholars who say, I accept the Jonamba position and stuff like that. On the one hand, Jonamba school says, and he was a great scholar, he was a great thinker, and this is a difficult subject and he got it wrong, according to Jetsun Kapa. Okay. And on the one hand, he says, the third turning of the wheel is to be taken literally. Okay. In the third turning of the wheel, what is the example used for Yongdu, or totality, meaning emptiness, code word. What is the example they use? Empty space. Okay, empty space, meaning the simple absence of something which can stop your hand from moving across the room, which is what? My hand here, okay? The absence of that is empty space. And I like to translate it as empty space, because it gives you that feeling of, you know, it's the absence of anything, any physical obstruction, okay? Tore gaksam mega, definition of namka. Okay, the simple absence of something tangible, stoppable, that would stop your hand. Okay, like that. So this has empty space. Everything occupies empty space. This thing is in empty space. If I moved it, the empty space would still be there. Empty space never changes. It can be occupado or no occupado. Okay, but it doesn't change. It's either occupied or not. When this planet is destroyed, and the last atom of this planet moves off into some other dust, into some other galaxy, the place where this planet used to stand will still be there and will not have changed an iota. You see what I mean? So you got to get used to that. That's empty space. So on the one hand, to accept that Lord Buddha meant that when he talked about emptiness, and then to describe emptiness as some positive, unchanging thing, self-standing, whole thing, like a physical object. You see what I mean? To say that emptiness is... some schools, not Jonamba, but other schools go so far as to say it's like a yellow colored light or a green colored light, or it is the nature of your mind, or it is your mind, or it's the thoughts running through your mind, or something like that. It's totally wrong, you see? Because that's a presence of something. That's the self-standing existence of something. You see, I mean, in the way that if I had a ball in my hands, that would be a positive object. And to think that, to say, as Jonamba said, emptiness is a positive thing, a positive presence of something, you know, and almost like a ball or something like that. Or to say that it is your mind, or it is the thinking in your mind, or any, which many schools are teaching nowadays, is wrong. Especially you can't agree with that if you say that the Buddha was being literal in the third turning of the wheel. You can't say both of those. You can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say the Buddha meant it when he said emptiness is the simple absence of something, in the way that space is an absence of something. And then on the other hand say, emptiness is this positive thing, it's a self-standing thing, it's like a big ball. Even to go so far as to say it's some kind of light that you see in your head, or it's the nature of your mind, or it's the thinking in your mind, or it's the opposite of everything that's not, or something like that. These are all explanations that you get in traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, and they're wrong. They can't be both right, you see? One of them has to be wrong. You know, and if you get it wrong, it's not just a question of two schools disagreeing with each other, or two thinkers disagreeing with each other, or two college professors on a TV show at 3 a.m. on Sunday, you know, discussing whether this thing is positive or negative. If you don't get emptiness right in this lifetime, if you do not see it directly in this lifetime, you must die and suffer. You cannot achieve enlightenment. Impossible. You know, you will die and suffer. This is not a philosopher's argument. This is how are you going to save your rear end before you die or not. It's not a light question, and it's not some kind of a sectarian question. It's not like that. It's essential to get it right or you'll die. You see what I mean? And if you get it right, you don't have to die. You can enter a tantric paradise in this lifetime, but you got to get it right. So it's not a meaningless question. Okay, so that's the refutation of the Jonamba on this point. And on other points they're right, and on other points they're wrong. But in this case, do you believe the third turning of the wheel was literal? Yes. Did Lord Buddha compare emptiness to a simple lack of things in empty space? Yes. And do you also state that emptiness is something positive and self-standing and ball-like thing? Yes. Then you contradict yourself. There's something wrong there, okay? You can't say it's the absence of something and the presence of something at the same time, okay? You can't say that. That's the refutation, okay? Now we'll go back to the content of the last class, okay? Lord Buddha taught basically three cycles of teaching. You can think of them historical, but it's not necessarily the case, right? I mean, when he taught about the four Arya truths, or the four noble truths, as he did on the first hour of his teaching on this planet, you know, he was teaching what we call the first turning of the wheel. When he was, you know, 75 years old, he was still teaching about that. But that would still be considered the first turning of the wheel. So every time he taught the four Arya truths, the five heaps, the 12 doors of sense, okay, the 18 categories of a human being, the 37 components of enlightenment, including the Eightfold Arya Path and all that stuff. Okay, when he taught all that stuff, when he used to teach it, he most often said, and by the way, it all has a nature of its own. All of those things have a nature of their own. Okay, do they have a self? No. Do they have a nature of their own? Yes. Do they exist by definition? Yes. Okay. Is it different to say a thing has a self, a thing has exists by definition, a thing exists truly, a thing exists from its own side? All the schools have different ideas, you see. When you get up to the highest school, it's all the same thing. To exist from its own side, to exist by definition, to exist in reality, to exist independent of your projections, is all the same thing. Impossible. Nothing's like that. But in the lower schools, big differences between them, okay? Big differences. So in the first turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha says, this pen does have a nature of its own. It has a ngonyi yopa. It has a nature of its own. Tseniki dupa, rangi tseniki dupa. It does exist by definition. Okay? A pen is a writing instrument by definition. Okay? This thing is a pen by definition. Okay? What you have before you is a pen by definition. He said that. First turning of the wheel. Second turning of the wheel, up on Rajagiri, Vulture Peak, right? Heart Sutra type of stuff, which was spoken there. He gets up and says, this pen, your nose, your head, this school, this city, everything you ever saw, everything you ever thought, every thought you have, everything in the universe, no nature of its own. Nothing has any nature of its own. To freak his students out, he even says, they don't even exist. You know, meaning they don't have any mikme, naome, name, jeme, nume, yime, sume, dame, teme, rumene, vishime. Nothing exists. Nothing you see, nothing you hear, nothing you smell, nothing you taste, nothing you think, nothing you touch. Nothing exists, you know. Meaning, nothing has any nature of its own. Okay. He says that in the second turning of the wheel, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, okay? Then in the third turning of the wheel, okay, who triggers the third turning of the wheel, according to the mind only? It's this Bodhisattva, okay? You can call him Dundang Yandapat. If you like Sanskrit, you can call him whatever it is. Paramartha Samudgata, okay? Let's call him the Bodhisattva, okay? And he comes up to Lord Buddha and says, you know, Lord Buddha, we really appreciate what you taught. It's been a great benefit to us. And you've been teaching all these years, and you taught about all that thing during the first turning of the wheel, then when you got to the second turning of the wheel, you taught that. But you know, I have one question. When you taught the subjects that relate to the first turning of the wheel, like the Four Noble Truths, the Four Arya Truths, you said, and when you taught the five heaps of a person, starting with your physical body, you said it all exists from its own side. It does have a nature of its own. You said that. Then when you got up on Vulture's Peak, I don't know, it was a lack of oxygen or whatever, okay, but then you said, nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing. Nothing has any nature of its own. This pen does not have any penness about it. Nothing. None. You know? So, what did you mean when you said that? You know, what, when you got to the second, by the way, he doesn't ask specifically about the first turning of the wheel. He asks about the second turning of the wheel. He says, what did you mean when you said nothing had any nature of its own? Meaning, what did you also mean when you said everything did have any nature of its own? Okay? So by implication, he's asking about the first turning of the wheel. But directly, he asks about the second turning of the wheel. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if the Dalai Lama got up, you know, in Madison Square Garden and said, nothing exists, by the way. You know, your head doesn't exist, your nose doesn't exist, New York City doesn't exist. Thank you very much. You know? I mean, you would be concerned, you know, you like the Dalai Lama, you believe the Dalai Lama, and then the Dalai Lama gets up and says something strange like that, you want to know what he's talking about. So you say, what did you mean when you said that? When the Bodhisattva asks that question, he is triggering the third turning of the wheel. It's called Lekpa Chewe Chunkor. Say, Lekpa Chewe Chunkor. Lekpa Chewe Chunkor. Lekpa Chewe means fine distinctions, very subtle distinctions. Okay? Distinctions between what? You tell me. He's clarifying something. What? Yeah, what he meant during the second turning of the wheel. He says, oh, you know, don't take me literally, okay? I mean, when I said nothing had any nature of its own, I didn't mean it literally. You gotta make distinctions here. You know, I meant it about some things, and I didn't mean it about other things. And then Dunayana Pak says, well, how many different things are we talking about here? And he says, how many?
Three.
Okay? I meant it in three completely different ways about three completely different groups of things. Okay? When I said nothing has any nature, first of all, here's number one, okay? We're going to have three, right? The first thing I was talking about was things that are just imaginary. Just things you make up in your mind. Okay? Think of, I don't know, a huge pumpkin resting on the Twin Towers. Okay? Just a huge pumpkin. Like you wake up tomorrow morning, it's in the New York Times. You know, if you get up high enough, you can see downtown. There's this huge pumpkin resting on the Twin Towers, you know, like crumbling some of the top of the Twin Towers, you know, and the police are like clearing people out, you know, is it going to fall down? But you can imagine this huge pumpkin, right? I mean, you can imagine it. That is in the category of things we call what in Tibetan? Kuntak. Say kuntak.
Kuntak.
Kuntak means imagined, imaginary, okay? So what does Lord Buddha say? Oh, you know, when I said nothing had any nature of its own, the first thing I was talking about was imaginary things, like the pumpkin that's crushing the two Twin Towers, okay, the Twin Towers, okay? And that does not exist by definition, and that's what I meant, okay? That's the first thing I meant. The first thing I meant when I said nothing had any nature of its own, I was talking about imaginary things, okay? By the way, question for you. Are imaginary things only non-existent? You know, are all kuntaks like that pumpkin?
No.
Some of them exist. Okay, Anne, Pelma, Nigel. Okay, those are imaginary things. Okay, those are mental constructs. You know, all that's really there is this guy with four limbs and a head. I'm making him Nigel. I'm thinking of him as Nigel. I'm naming him in my words, and I'm thinking of him in a certain way with my mind. And that's a construct. That's the same as the pumpkin, except it exists. It exists in my mind, okay? It's not like I shook his hand the first day and said, oh, you're Nigel, I can tell. You know, it was only after somebody told me, no, this is how you spell his name, this is his name, this name belongs to this guy. And when you think of this guy, when you meet this guy, you have to imagine him that way, you know? And that's an imagination, okay? That's Nigel, okay? And Nigel, quote, or car, or house, or arm. Those things are idealizations. They never change. They're perfect things that exist in your mind. Okay? That pumpkin that's crushing the... Well, let's not use that one. Let's use one that exists. Okay? You know, the idea, Nigel, is a idealization. It's a perfect little picture in my mind of this guy. And in this school, they say it does not change. Okay? Nigel can go out of existence. We can say Nigel's not around anymore. And the idea of Nigel will slowly fade in the world. But while he's here, while you're thinking of him as Nigel, you have this mental picture, perfect Nigel. Impossibly perfect, actually. But you have this mental picture called Nigel, and that does not change. Okay? Yeah?
In the mind-only school, how would they explain, like, you're different? Let's say I liked Nigel one day and I didn't like him.
Yeah. She said, your vision, your mental picture of Nigel can change, and then, you know, a week later you say, I don't like him anymore, and then your mental picture must be, by definition, slightly different than it was a week before. That's called a mental picture of Nigel's characteristics, which in this school is differentiated from a mental picture of Nigel. You see? Your mental picture of his characteristics is adjusted or changed or something like that, but the mental picture of Nigel-ness didn't change. You can attribute him evil, or you can attribute him goodness, but him doesn't change. You see what I mean? The basic Nigel, the picture of Nigel doesn't change. It's like that. It's an idealization, a perfect mental image. Yeah.
But I follow him getting older, and then have another picture of him.
But you can't say he's getting older if you don't have a basic picture where you compare a picture of him younger and a picture of him older. You see what I mean? But you still have the basic picture. You see what I mean? So they distinguish in this school between a mental image of the features of the object and a mental image of the object itself. And we'll talk about it more later. Okay? And that's the first thing I meant, says Lord Buddha, when I said nothing had any nature of its own. I meant there were certain kind of things that didn't have any kind of reality to them. They're just imaginary. Okay? Because in this school, here's a question for you. What does it mean to have a nature of its own? What does it mean to exist by definition? In this school, mind-only school, what does it mean to exist by definition? The thing comes from its own side, through its own unique way of being. Okay? Does that pumpkin that's crushing the Twin Towers have some kind of essential identity from its own side, whether or not you dream it up?
In the mind-only school.
No, it does not. Okay? Therefore, in the mind-only school, they would say, that thing doesn't exist by definition. That's what they mean by definition. Okay? Why? Because it's just something you made up. It's not like it's there and it's exuding its own identity towards you. It's not like it's out there and it has its own identity. And it doesn't depend on you dreaming it up or not. Okay? There is a pumpkin crushing the two towers, you know, from its own side. And it has its own identity. In the way that this pen has its own reality. Okay? In their school, not at all the same thing. Okay? In their school, not at all the same thing. This pen has some real reality from its own side. It has an identity which it is broadcasting to you. But when you dream up in your mind a pumpkin crushing the Twin Towers, it doesn't have at all the same kind of reality. Right? That's all. In this school, that's what it means to either exist by definition or not to exist by definition. This thing exists by definition. It has its own causes. It came from its own factory. It's full of its own ink. It does its own thing. It functions, everything else. That imaginary thing crushing the Twin Towers doesn't have any of those things. It's just a mental picture of something that doesn't even exist. And in some cases it does exist. Okay, I can think up of Nigel or something like that. But that thought in itself isn't doing anything, you know, like that. Okay? That's a difference. That's the first thing, says Lord Buddha, that I meant when I said nothing had any nature of its own. I was talking about these weird things that you just think up in your mind. Okay? Some of them correspond to something real, Nigel. Some of them don't correspond to something real, pumpkin, crushing the Twin Towers. Or what? Self-existent thing. Can you imagine a self-existent thing? Yeah. Does it exist? No. In this school, also. Okay? That's a kuntak also. Okay? Self-existent thing. And we'll get into what it means in this school to be self-existent. Okay?
So yeah. Having a nature of its own and existing by definition is the same.
Big difference.
Having a nature by its own.
No, big difference here. Three different things don't have natures of their own, but among those, only one doesn't exist by definition. Okay? Don't forget, take off your middle way hat. Okay? Forget the middle way school. In the middle way school, to exist by definition and to have your own nature is the same thing. It doesn't exist at all. Okay? In the middle way school, to say that something exists by definition and to say that something has its own nature are equally absurd. There's no such thing. In the middle way school, same thing. In the mind-only school, hey, three things don't have their own nature, but only one of them doesn't exist by definition. What's that? Imaginary things. Okay? Now, what are the other two things that don't exist by... What are the other things, two things that Lord Buddha was talking about when he was fooling us during the... Which turning of the wheel? Second turn of the wheel, right? Don't forget your mind-only school, right? By the way, middle way school says what? Second turn of the wheel is true. Third turn of the wheel is
not true.
Not true. Why? Because in the third turn of the wheel, Lord Buddha said, in the second turn of the wheel, half the stuff I said was true, half the stuff wasn't. Okay? Middle way school says he was bullshitting in the third wheel. Okay? Mind-only school says he was bullshitting during the second wheel. That's all. Okay? All right? You got to remember that. You got to remember which school you're in, okay? Why are we doing this? I mean, it's confusing, right? In the end, it will clarify your thinking about emptiness because you still have some wrong ideas that are very subtle about emptiness, and you are a classic mind-only school person. Every person in this room, I would guess, if you're not, if you are who you seem to be, which I don't know, okay? But if you're a normal person, you have certain wrong ideas about emptiness that are exactly the wrong ideas that the mind-only school has. So if you're some very kind lama in 1400s, trying to predict what people might need in America in 1998, you'd write this book comparing what the mind-only school thinks about emptiness and what the middle-way school thinks about emptiness, because you know that those people are getting very close to the right idea of emptiness. They got a little bit wrong idea left, which happens to be exactly what the mind-only school thinks about emptiness. And that's why Lord Buddha taught the mind-only school. Okay, that's why he taught it 2,500 years ago for you. Okay, for him, 500 BC and 1998 are totally the same. Absolutely no difference in an enlightened being's mind. They are as much today as they are 2,500 years ago. Lord Buddha is not on this planet, but his experience of this very moment is as direct as his experience of his own lifetime. You know, when he taught the mind-only school, during the third turning of the wheel, he taught it for you. Because he knew you needed it. Because he knew you still have some leftover mind-only ideas about emptiness. Okay? And if you learn them, then you can eliminate them. Yeah?
How do we verify that Jason Kappa's
interpretation is correct? Okay. Yeah, very, very good. Very, very good. He says, how do we verify that that Jetson Kappa's interpretation of this whole thing is correct? And we talked about it the first day. We talked about it in the first class. Jetson Kappa says, you cannot verify it by what? By words. You can't say, Jetson Kappa said that. Jetson Kappa said, the second turning of the wheel is correct, the third turning of the wheel is just you have to interpret it. You can't say that. Why? Because people like Lord Buddha go around saying stuff like that, and they don't mean it either. So you can't trust a person's words. He ends up saying what? You must use reasoning. You must figure it out. In the end, you must use those three tests. You know, does it correspond to your own direct experience? Does it correspond to what is logical to you? Does it correspond to the words that you've heard of people that you believe, like the Dalai Lama, or, you know, who are authoritative, that you accept as authoritative? And if it passes those tests, then accept it. What's that? Yeah, it may be figurative too. Yeah. Obviously, the first two are more important, okay? The first two are more important. Yeah. No, it's fine. Go ahead. By the way, this is the whole point of the class. This is the whole big question. How do you know Jetson Kappa wasn't fooling us on this? Okay.
I mean, for the last two, it's reasonable enough. Okay, we can use inference or logic to deduce that, yeah, it's a valid, workable view of emptiness. And then, you know, the last one, the Buddha said this, or somebody I like and trust. Okay, that's good and fine. I'll take it at face value. But on the first side, you know, direct experience, in the sense that, you know, say a Vajrabandhu or someone like that has had the Chittamatra, the mind-only version of emptiness, and, you know, his personal experience has been that. And so then he writes about it and so on and so forth. You know, or I might, perhaps, if I'm lucky someday, have that kind of an experience as well. So that would be my personal experience that would, you know, correlate to the mind only. Now, the one question that brings along is that because the way we think about a problem shapes the outcome of that problem, how do we then know that we're, you know, barking up the right tree or the wrong tree?
Two things. He basically said, I have to repeat for the tape, okay? It was like Master Vasubandhu, for example, wrote a lot about the mind-only school. And did he have mind-only realizations? But is he writing about his own personal realizations? It appears that Master Vasubandhu, who wrote a lot from the mind-only school's point of view, is relating his own personal experiences, direct personal experiences. And then if I... approach a question from a certain point of view, certain prejudices or certain question, then don't I affect the outcome of how I think about it or something like that? The first answer would be that Master Vasubandhu, it's obviously a big question, you know. He wrote the Abhidharma Kosha. He wrote the root text for the Vaibhashika school, the lowest school. Throughout the book he says sero, which means they say or they claim. Okay, and so, you know, by the end of the book, he reveals that he's just reporting something that he doesn't believe. You know, that a lot of the Abhidharma Kosha is not correct, but he wants to report what the Kashmiri Vaibhashika believe. Okay, and it's the same with the mind-only school. He wrote from the point of view of the mind-only school, but he didn't accept it. Okay, how do we establish that? You know, how do we establish that he did that, and how do we establish what he thought? I mean, one important test is reality itself. If you practice meditating on emptiness, if you think carefully about emptiness, if you study dependent origination, you will come to certain realizations that contradict the mind-only school. You will come, because that it happens to be reality. You see, I mean, you will come to... That's one test. I mean, personal experience means that you will begin to experience those things yourself. Ultimately, you will find, and this is very important, I heard a very authoritative person today give a ridiculous explanation of emptiness to this group of people. You know, and they said emptiness means that nothing changes or something that, you know, or everything changes. They said that. And emptiness means that it's not true that nothing changes. You know what I mean? The test of an idea about emptiness, supposedly, the power of understanding emptiness is that it will destroy your mental afflictions. You will become a totally happy being. You will never have a mental affliction again. Supposedly, the only energy in the universe which can destroy your own negativities and your own negative thoughts and your own negative events in your life is an understanding of emptiness. If you are holding a certain understanding of emptiness, like this one I heard today from this great scholar from a major university, right? That emptiness means everything's changing, you know. And if that makes you, if it reduces your mental afflictions over a period of time that you practice that, then it's emptiness. And the fact is, it's not. And it doesn't have any effect on your mental afflictions at all. You know what I mean? So that's another personal experience. That's another personal test. But what they mean more in this context is not a personal experience of emptiness so much, but does a person's description of what emptiness means in any way contradict your own direct experience of your world? That's all. That's the main test. Okay. Yeah, one more, then we got to go or we won't make it to the end.
Yeah, so
although we can stay till 10:30.
Going back to the difference between Chautauqua and Shenmue.
Yeah.
What is, perhaps we can get at it this way, what is the difference between the Kuntaka Nigel, which we talked of as the name of Nigel and the self-realization of Nigel, and the Shenmue of a person whose characteristics is, whose characteristic is Nigel?
Yeah, you can say, it's the difference, he said, what's the difference between the Shenmue of Nigel and the Kuntaka Nigel, basically, okay? The idealization or the construct Nigel, and the changing object called Nigel, okay? And that goes back to the boy named Tashi, okay? The Shenwang, the changing thing, is the object of the appellation, is the object of the name, is the object of the label. That's that crying, screaming lump of flesh that came out of the mother's womb. That's the Shenwang. Think of that as the Shenwang. That is the changing object, okay? And it was only 24 hours later, after some consultations between mom and dad, that they decide to think of this screaming blob of flesh as Tashi. You see what I mean? And then Tashi is created. You see? Then the idea Tashi comes into being. And forever after, people are focusing on the same blob of flesh, and there is between the perceiver and the Shenwang an intermediate step called the Kuntag, which is the idea of them as Tashi. My boy Tashi. Okay? When the blob came out of the womb, did everybody say, oh, my boy Tashi? No. You see what I mean? That's evidence that my boy Tashi doesn't exist by definition. It does not have a unique way of being that's coming from its own side. Because if it did, then the minute he popped out, everybody'd say, hey, Tashi! You know what I mean? Seriously. That's an indication that Shenwang's, the blob of flesh crying, does exist from its own side, does exist by definition in this school, does have its own unique way of being, which is like broadcasting itself towards you. And Tashi doesn't, because if Tashi did, then the minute he popped out, everybody, the doctor who never heard of what the parents wanted to call him, would say, hey, it's Tashi. Okay? The Tashi is a creation of the mind that is labeled or applied to the blob of flesh later, a day later. Now later on in his life, people start to get confused. And Tashi seems to be more and more self-existent. Right? It more and more seems that he should be Tashi, and he has to be Tashi, and every time you meet him, he is Tashi. Right? You start to confuse this label that was applied later. And in the mind-only school system, that is ignorance. To believe that the name Tashi applies to Tashi by definition is in this school ignorance that causes all your suffering. To believe that a pen is called a pen by definition, to believe that this pen is a pen by definition, to believe that this pen is the object of the idea and the name pen by some kind of act of God and not because it's some kind of construct is ignorance in this school. And it is what causes all your suffering. It is the first link of the wheel of life. It's very interesting, but we'll get to it later, okay? Okay, now, what was the second? We're still reviewing the last class, okay? What's the second thing that Lord Buddha meant when he said, oh, by the way, Bodhisattva, don't worry. The second thing I meant when I said nothing had a nature was I was talking about what? Shenwangs. Say Shenwang.
Shenwang.
Changing things, dependent things, things with causes and conditions, things that come from other things, things that depend on other things, things at the mercy of other things, which is what Shenwang means. Okay, the word Shenwang, at the mercy of other things. They have to sit around and wait for their seeds to come before they can pop up. They don't get to pop up on their own. Okay, that's what Shenwang means. Okay, and he said, now, what did Lord Buddha mean when he said those things don't have a nature of their own? What did he mean? Did he mean they don't exist somehow? Did he mean somehow they're imaginary, like Kuntaks? No, he meant something totally different. They don't have a nature of coming, popping up by themselves. That's all. They don't have a nature of popping up by themselves. They depend on other things to happen. What's that got to do with my life? Why was it such a big deal that Buddha got up on Vulture's Peak and said, by the way, changing things don't have any nature of popping up on their own? What was he talking about? Your suffering, your aging, your death, the fact that nothing goes right in your life, the fact that every time something goes good, it screws up. Every relationship you ever had, okay? Everything. Every good thing you have, you must lose. Where is that coming from? Did it just pop up on itself? No. Why did the Lord Buddha get up on Vulture's Peak and say, changing things don't just happen by themselves? They don't have a nature of just happening by themselves. He's trying to teach you how to stop your suffering. He's trying to say, look, everything that's happening to you in this screwy lifetime has a cause. You straighten up those causes, you don't have to go through this kind of stuff anymore. That's all. That's an important message. That's the second thing I meant, says Lord Buddha, when I said nothing has a nature of its own. Okay, what was the third thing he meant? Nothing's ultimate. Nothing's ultimate. Okay. What did he mean? He meant two things, okay? Things don't have a nature of being self-existent. And things don't have a nature, how should we say? Many things don't have a nature of being what you see when you see emptiness directly. That's all. Okay? He's talking about emptiness. He's describing emptiness. Stated in a positive way, if something qualifies as that object that you see when you see emptiness directly, it is emptiness in this school, Yongdu. Okay? If something doesn't qualify as a self-existent thing, if something is the absence of self-existent things, then it's emptiness in this school. And that was what I meant when I said the third kind of no nature. Okay? Things don't have a nature of being ultimate if they ain't what you see when you see emptiness directly. And things don't have a nature of being ultimate if they lack a self-existent thing, which everything does. Okay, all right? That's what he meant. Okay, what's he talking about there? Emptiness itself. Okay, what's the first thing Lord Buddha meant when he said nothing had any nature of its own? Imaginary things don't exist really. What's the second thing he meant when he said nothing has any nature of its own? Hey, the stuff that's happening to you in your life that's causing all your pain, It's not like it doesn't come from nowhere. It's not like it comes from nowhere. It has a reason. It has a cause. What's the third thing he meant when he said nothing had any nature? Hey, look, there's certain things that if you saw them, you'd be free. That's emptiness. They don't have a nature of existing self-existently or something like that. That's the third thing he meant, the third thing he was talking about. So he's talking about, when he says nothing has a nature, he's talking about imaginary things. don't have a nature of being real. What's the nastiest imaginary thing in your life? Gotcha, self-existent thing. You go around every millisecond of your life thinking there's something there that's not there and that causes all the suffering in your life. Give me an example. My boss comes from his own side. It's not me. Okay? The person I had a fight with today is bad from their side. It's not me. Okay? That's an imaginary thing. It doesn't exist. The person that you had a fight today who comes from their own side doesn't exist, never existed, can't exist. And you believing that causes all your mental afflictions, all your bad karma, and that's why you're getting old. And if you stopped it, you could actually stop the aging process. And that's a tantric process. You know, stopping those particular ways of thinking of things has an effect on your inner winds, and your body actually stops aging. Okay? Very profound. You know, you can become a tantric deity in this life. You have to straighten out your winds. How do you do that? Stop thinking of things as self-existent. You must stop. Okay? But to do that, you have to know what self-existent means. Okay? So what's the first thing that Lord Buddha meant when he said nothing has any nature of its own? He's talking about self-existent things. Mainly. Kuntaks. Imaginary things. What's the worst, nastiest imaginary thing in the world? A boss that comes from his own side. A boss who's bad from his own side. Okay? Your problems in your life that you're not responsible for. Which is zero. Okay? Really. That's an imaginary thing. That's a kuntak. That's a self-existent object and it causes all our suffering. What's the second example of a thing that doesn't have any nature of its own? All the changing things in your life. Like what? Like the last relationship you had that fell apart. Okay? It's not like it doesn't come from no causes. It has its own causes. You've got to figure them out and stop it. That's the second thing I meant when I said nothing had any nature of its own. What's the third thing I meant when I said nothing has any nature of its own? By the way, if you cancel all the bosses in the world who exist from their own side, what you have left is emptiness. And that's reality. That's ultimate reality. That's the real way things are. There are no bosses in the world who come from their own side and torture you. They are all coming from you. If you count up all the bosses in the world who are causing you suffering, or spouses or anything else who are causing you suffering from their own side, it equals exactly zero. There's none. Emptiness. Okay? There are no such things. They don't exist. But you spend your whole day swimming in those things, thinking they do exist. That creates all your mental afflictions. That creates all your mistakes in speech and thought and action. And they perpetuate this world. And they will kill you. You know, if you don't stop it, they will kill you. They're in the process of killing you. That's why you look older than you did 5 years ago. Okay? Period. Okay? Yeah?
If I take all the existing things and I strip away the concepts and I strip away all the changing things and I strip away emptiness.
Yeah. There's nothing else left.
It's nothing left. So,
yeah. By the way,
positively stated, it means that in the mind only, with the three things, it's also that he said there is nothing which has a nature of its own. Because he, in the three examples or in the three categories, he covered everything.
Yeah, Axel made a good point.
So
those three things cover everything. Imaginary things, changing things, and emptiness covers everything.
So the difference between the second and the third turn is just that in the second turn you say they don't even exist, also not by definition, and in the third turn, he said that only the imaginary things are not existing by definition, but the others exist by definition.
Roughly you can say that. What Axel said is, if you summarize it, A, those three things that don't have any nature of their own happen to equal up to all the things in the universe. That's true. In fact, a little bit more, because this one has a little bit of non-existent stuff in it. Okay? All right. Let me finish. So they add up to everything in the universe. Okay? Now, in the second turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha said about those three things what? None of them has any nature of its own. A. B. None of them exist by definition. And that's the same thing. Okay. But then in the third turning of the wheel, he says, yeah, I did say none of them had any nature of its own. But I meant three completely different things. Three completely different natures that they didn't have. And by the way, out of those three, it's only the first that doesn't exist by definition. And what I meant by definition is something different than what I said in the second turning of the wheel. Okay? You got to get used to that. What's the use of going through all these mental gymnastics? You will understand exactly all the wrong ideas about emptiness, the subtle wrong ideas about emptiness. And then your own understanding of emptiness will be crystal clear by the end, I hope, if you stay in the class. Okay. Why? She says, aren't we back to the middle way here? Why? She said, are we back to the middle way school in the third category, right? Are we? Let's check, okay? Do they describe Yongdrup or emptiness in their system as the simple absence of the gacha, the simple absence of a self-existent thing? Does the mind-only school also say that?
Yes.
From that point of view, they're describing it in exactly the sweet, true way, okay? Emptiness is the general absence of a self-existent thing. It's like saying there's no two-headed, 30-foot purple elephant rampaging through this auditorium at this moment, smashing people. Okay? Is it true that there's no elephant like that in this room at this moment? Yes. Is it almost silly to talk about it? Yes. Why? They don't exist anyway. Hey, emptiness is exactly the same. You go around your whole life thinking that something's there that has never been there, is not there now, and could never have been there, and will never be there. Okay? Remember, we're dealing with the emptiness of a thing that's impossible. What's an example of an impossible self-existent thing? How about your boss who's bad from his side, and who's not created by you thinking of him exactly the way you think of him when he's bad to you? You know, how about a boss like that? Find me a boss in the world who is really nasty and not because you created him. There ain't any. There never will be any. And that's the emptiness of those bosses. Okay. So in both schools, emptiness is the general absence of an impossible self-existent thing that if you believe in that thing, you get in trouble. Okay. Now how do you describe a self-existent thing is big difference in the two schools. We didn't get there yet. Okay, we didn't get there yet. What it means to be self-existent is totally different in the two schools. It's useful to study it because it clarifies your thinking about what self-existent really means. Today I heard a recognized, international, acclaimed Buddhist university scholar from a major American university describe emptiness as changing, that the fact that things change. You see? And first of all, that's a positive thing, right? I mean, you're already Jonamba, okay? And then beyond that, it doesn't help you. It doesn't release you from your suffering. Now you have to prove that. You have to be able to distinguish that from what emptiness really means. And to do that, you have to study the different schools, okay? By the way, there's no Buddhist school that says that that's what emptiness is, okay? You know that. All right. We go on to the real class, all right? And by the way, that's the way they teach this subject. In the monastery, typically, half of the next class will be about the last class because it's so difficult. You have to maintain the continuity. You know, you have to keep bridging from the last class. Okay. Now, bad news for you. That whole class and a half just covered what the Buddha meant in the second turning of the wheel when he said nothing had any nature of its own. Okay? That's all. That's all we covered. But he said four other things, right? We've only covered 20%, okay? Remember, he said five things. About in the second turning of the wheel, he said five radical things. The most radical thing that we spent the most time on was what?
Nothing.
Nothing has any nature of its own. This pen doesn't have any nature of its own, okay? Now we've clarified that. How? This bodhisattva came up and said, what the heck did you mean when you say this pen doesn't have any nature of its own? After you got through teaching half your life that everything did have a nature of its own. And Lord Buddha says, oh, I was just speaking figuratively, you know. I didn't mean it. You know, it's not really like that. Okay? And mind-only school is like, oh, great, you know. We thought you went crazy or something, you know. Okay? And middle-way school is like, what? He's fooling them again, you know. They can't handle it. So he's like lightening the message up for them. His Holiness does it all the time, right? Okay? So like, oh, he's lightening up so they don't freak out. You know, the fact that he asked the question means what? If you're a sensitive teacher, now you're going to have to adjust things for them. Oh, I didn't mean that, you know. That would be freaky, right? Then that would be too much, you know. You have to divide what I said. Some things do have a nature, some things don't have a nature. I didn't mean nothing had a nature, you know what I mean? The fact that the guy asked the question means that if you're a sensitive teacher, you have to immediately readjust. I taught in, was it Kentucky or Tennessee? Where were we? You know, they wanted to know, I think Christy and some other, Tessie was there, children. And I got up, they said, we want to know the fine points of Vinaya, you know. So I get up and I start explaining the Abhidharma system of how vowels are this extraordinary halo around this. Number of Jayamayambe Suk, you know. And after like 3 minutes, they're all like, you know. And then I went to Lamrim. I just went zip. And I went to Lamrim. And then we had this great class for 3 days. They never recognized that I didn't teach what I was supposed to teach. You know, and we all had a good time, and Tussie comes up to me and says, you know, you shifted gear after 3 minutes. You shifted to a whole different subject. Nobody even noticed, you know. I said, yeah, because the audience wasn't ready for it, you know. So you just shift gears. You go down about three gears, you know. And that's what Lord Buddha is doing in the third turning of the wheel, according to... yeah, no, not according to Jetson Kampa. According to the Middle Way School, okay. According to the Middle Way School. He's changing gears to soften it up. Okay. Going back to the five things he said, five radical things. He said, nothing has nature, in the second turning of the wheel, right? Nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing starts or grows. Nothing ever stops. Everything is in a state of peace from the beginning. Everything is nirvana. Okay? Five different radical statements. Okay? I'm going to spell them. I'll write them out for you. Okay? We're going to go one by one through them. Okay, I'm going to put them up one by one, the different things that Lord Buddha said. We got to cover the other four. The other four are easy. The first one is hard. Okay? Here's the first one of the four. Yeah, this is actually the second of the five and the first of the last four. Okay? In the study of this subject, they say, which one are you studying? You say, I'm on the last four. You see, they call it the latter four or the first. You see, when you say, what are you studying nowadays? Chang'e Lekshin Nyingbo. Oh, which one are you studying? First one or the other four? You see? So I'm on the other four. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, the first one was Ngonyi Mepa. Nothing has any nature of its own. We covered that. We finished it. It's all wrapped up, packaged. You understand it perfectly. It refers to three different ways in which nothing has a nature. Kuntak, Shenwang. What was the other one?
Yongdu.
Okay, you finished that. You got that. Now we're on to the other four. Say Makepa. Makepa. Nothing starts. Nothing grows. The expanded version here is Chotamje Makepa. Nothing in the universe has a nature of growing. Nothing. Let's talk about the sun going up in the morning. Coming up. Okay? That's a perfect example of Makepa. Okay? Does the sun come up in the morning? Of course it does. Okay? I mean, you know. I'm never there to witness it exactly, but okay. But by 10 it's definitely up, I'll tell you that. Okay? So, you know, it does come up in the morning. Okay? But Buddha, Lord Buddha in the second turning of the wheel says it does not come up in the morning. The sun, this is a perfect example. Whenever you think of Makepa, think of the sun. The sun does not come up in the morning. In the Middle Way School, what does that mean when Lord Buddha says the sun doesn't come up in the morning? What? From its own side. Independent of your projections. Okay. The reason you see the sun come up in the morning is that your past karma is screwing around with your mind and forcing you to see this thing come up. Okay. If your past karma wasn't there to make you see it come up, you wouldn't see it come up, and it wouldn't come up, and you'd be blind in a prison somewhere or dead and on another planet. Okay? Seriously. Okay? The day that the karma ends for you to see the sun come up in the morning, we'll say, oh, she died last night. Okay? That karma is not self-existent. That karma is not permanent. It is wearing out every time you see the sun come up. You know, don't think it's your God-given right to see the sun come up, because there will be a morning when you don't. Okay? It's a karmic result, and it's wearing out as we speak. Okay? You are closer to the last time you see the sun come up. Okay? Every time we speak, you are closer to that day. Okay? It does not exist from its own side. Makyepa. Okay? From the middle way point of view. Mind only school has a totally different take on it, because they say Lord Buddha wasn't speaking literally when he said nothing starts. You have to interpret it. He didn't mean, would he say that? Would he say like the sun coming up depends on your mind? Of course not. Of course the sun comes up from its own side. You know, go out and look in the morning. I mean, what do you think, you're just dreaming it? You think you're imagining it? You think it's just a projection of your mind? Come on, it heats the whole planet. 6 billion people see the same thing. Are you crazy? He's like, six billion people having a collective hallucination? Middle way school would say?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Okay? Just because it's more people doesn't make it less unreal. Okay? I mean, that's middle way school. Mind only school says, come on, don't be crazy. Of course the sun comes up in the morning from its own side. Okay? So what did Lord Buddha mean when he said things don't start in the mind-only school? Now, if you're mind-only school, when Lord Buddha starts saying crazy things, you're going to divide him into those three categories, because it makes it easier to understand him. Okay? So don't forget, on your homework, when you get to what does the mind-only school say about things not starting, you're going to have to say, oh, excuse me, which things are we talking about? Kuntaks, Shenwangs, or Yongdrus? Okay? Are we talking about imagined things? Are we talking about things that come from their causes? Or are we talking about emptiness? Because he meant a different thing in each case when he said they don't start. Okay? Oh, well, what did he mean? You got to cover all three, okay? You got to cover all three. What do imaginary things grow? First question. Let's not say start, let's say grow. Okay? Do imaginary things grow? Did that pumpkin that's crushing the Twin Towers start as a small pumpkin and get bigger? You know? Did my conceptualization of the person named Nigel start like 2 inches high and then go to 4 inches high and then get 5 feet, 6 feet? No. It's a perfect little idealization from the first moment I have it. It's called Nigel. Okay? It's not like it grows. Okay? It comes into existence, we don't say it grows. Grows means a process of starting small and getting bigger. Okay? And my idealization of Nigel, or the thing you call car, or the thing you call pot, or the thing you call school, is a perfect little picture from the first moment of his existence. Okay? It does not slowly, like, grow.
Okay? What if I do imagine Nigel small and grow?
Oh, you can say that you have an idealization of a small Nigel, and then you have an idealization of a larger Nigel. That's okay. Those are different things. But we're talking about Nigel-ness. Okay? The concept Nigel-ness, or me. You see? The concept me. It's not like it gets smaller and it grows bigger and like that. You're either a perfect me or you're not a perfect me. Period. That's all. In this school. Okay? Like that. And I think even in the other schools you'd say that. Okay? So first of all, can you say that Lord Buddha, what did Lord Buddha mean when he said things don't grow? Oh, which of the three categories are we talking about here? Imaginary things. When he said imaginary things don't grow, was he being literal? I'll ask you again. Be careful, okay? We are in a class about what's literal and what's figurative, right? That's the subject of this class. I ask you again. When Lord Buddha said, mind only, put on your mind only hat, okay? Forget middle way. When Lord Buddha said that imaginary things don't grow, was he being literal?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, got it? That one's easy. Okay. What about emptiness? Was he being literal when he said emptiness doesn't grow? Of course, why? Emptiness doesn't get bigger, smaller. Come on, you're either 100% empty or you're not. Okay? You're either the fact that there's no 30-foot, two-headed purple elephant in this room or not. Can he be halfway here? Yeah, I used to try to imagine his butt in the room and his head outside. It's not like that, okay? I mean, either he's here or he's not here. You see, reality, truth is like that. Truth is either 100% true or not true. It's either A or B. You can't say A and a half. You see what I mean? If this room has its emptiness, then it's 100% emptiness. You see? It can't be like 40% empty. Okay? So Yongdrups, the third category, emptiness itself, according to the Minoy school, could never have grown anyway. Okay? Because it don't change. Emptiness doesn't change. Can emptiness go out of existence? Does the emptiness of this pen go out of existence when I destroy the pen? Yes. Does it slowly stop in stages? No. It just blinks out. You see what I mean? It's 100% emptiness up to the last moment of the pen's existence. And in the next moment, there is no pen, so there's no emptiness of the pen. But the emptiness doesn't get smaller or get older or shrink a little bit or become 40% emptiness and then 30% emptiness or something like that. You got to get used to that. Okay? Emptiness is a constant. Okay? Unchanging. Okay? That's why I don't like the translation impermanent. It's wrong. Is emptiness impermanent? Yes. It goes away. Does it change? No. That's a mistranslation. A terrible mistranslation. Okay? Anyway. In the sutra, where the Bodhisattva asks the question, and Lord Buddha explains himself, and when he gets to Maikepa, he covers the Maikepa of imaginary things. They don't grow. And then he covers the Maikepa of emptiness. It doesn't grow. And you know what? He leaves out Shenwangs. Okay? He leaves out Shenwangs. I mean, everybody freaked for the next 2,000 years. People are wondering, why the hell did he leave out Shenwangs? You know, you tell me. What does Jetsun Kapa say? What do you guess he says? Why did Buddha skip Shenwangs when he got to Maikepa? When he said, things don't grow. They do exist. They do grow. Not only do they grow, in this school, they grow by definition. They 100% grow. Forget it, man. They grow from their own side. They grow through some unique way of being in their own. They're not even a projection when they grow. They're growing out there on their own. Lord Buddha would never say they didn't grow. That's why Lord Buddha skipped it. Okay? He'd be crazy to say they didn't grow in this school. Not only do they grow in this school, they grow by definition, meaning from their own side, by themselves. Nothing to do with my projections or anything else. I'm not imagining it. It's out there. My boss is an asshole from his own side. It's not me. It's not my fault. He's a bad person. Everyone should dislike him like I do. I don't know why some people see him as nice. He's self-existently 100% evil. You know? The people who think he's got any good qualities are having non-pramanas. You know? They don't understand. You know? Okay? He's bad from his own side. It's nothing to do with me. Okay? So we skip it, okay? In this school, in the sutra, he skips it. And you'll see in the reading a discussion, hey, why did Buddha skip it? Okay? That's the second. We'll do one more and then we'll take a break. Say Margakpa. Okay, write it down. Say Margakpa. Margakpa. This is the third thing that the Lord Buddha said in his crazy second turning of the wheel. You know? From the Minoli point of school. He went out of control. Okay? Said nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing begins. Nothing grows. And then he said Magapa. Magapa means nothing ends. Nothing is destroyed. Okay? He said that. Nothing in the universe ends. He says. Nothing has a nature of ending. We can use as an example death itself. Okay? Now, my teacher in the monastery, he'd say, I'm going to let you guys take a little trip, you know? I open the door to Middleway School, okay? You're tired of this confusing mind-only stuff? Let's go back home, you know? I let you go in the Middleway School, okay? Take off that mind-only hat, put back on your Nagarjuna, Jetsun Kapa, Lord Buddha hat, go into that comfortable place called Middleway School, okay? What did Lord Buddha mean? Let's take the ultimate Magakpa, your death, okay? What did Lord Buddha mean when he said, you don't die? Marikbame, Marikbase, Bame, Bane, Gashime. You don't die. What did he mean? What did he mean? Yeah, you don't die independent of your projections. Your own death is your projection. Okay? The day you die and you look down and see this dead body, except you can't look down, okay? That's a projection. It does not have any reality of its own. Okay? And if you stopped the state of mind that does that projection, you would be in a tantric paradise, never to die again. And you can do it because it's true that it's a projection. This becomes important. Projections are not like some philosophical play thing. You know what I mean? This is life or death. You don't have to die. It's a projection that you're getting older, and it's a projection that you'll die. Okay? When Lord Buddha said, nothing ends, magakpa, in the second turning of the wheel, what he meant was, things don't end independent of your projections. It's all your projections. If you fixed your mental afflictions, you wouldn't have to die. Tantrically speaking, your winds would straighten out and you would actually change your body. Your body would change, okay? Permanently. Okay? That's all. You can do it, okay? That's what he meant. Okay, now, forget that Diamond Cutter Sutra stuff. Close the door, middle way, come back to mind only. Okay? Come back to the mind only. Come back to this auditorium, okay? We're in the mind only school. Hey, I was just kidding when I said things didn't end. I didn't mean it. Of course things end. Okay? Of course things end. Let's talk about those three categories. Okay? We're in the mind-only school, right? We got to look at each of the three categories. What's the first one? Kundaks. Imaginary things. Do imaginary things end? Does the pumpkin that's crushing the Twin Towers get old and soggy and start falling down? And people climb up to make pumpkin pies or something. You know, no, okay? Never could get old. Okay, when Lord Buddha said things don't end, what he meant about imaginary things is that they don't get old anyway, come on. Okay, they're just in your mind. Okay. Then when he gets to emptiness, he says, emptiness don't end, and is he being literal? Yeah, emptiness does not get old. Okay? Emptiness does not wear out. Does emptiness go out of existence? Yes. When the pen is destroyed, its emptiness goes out of existence. But in the final hours of the pen, does the emptiness get less empty? No. It's always 100% empty. Up to the last moment, it's 100.000% empty. Up to the last moment of the pen's existence. The pen, up to the last moment of existence, is anything but self-existent. Forever. Okay? For as long as it's there, it's 100% not self-existent. It doesn't get less that way or more that way. It's always been that way, okay? So, category number three, Yongdu, emptiness in the mind-only school. Does it slow down and end? No, okay? That's what Lord Buddha meant during the second turning of the wheel. And again, the sutra skips what? Shenwangs, okay? Lord, if you notice in the sutra, Lord Buddha doesn't say, oh, and what I meant when I said changing things don't end, he doesn't end, he skips it. Why? Changing things do end. They not only end, they end in this school by definition, from their own side. Nothing else necessary. No projections, no imaginations. They have their own external reality. They end because their causes stop, and they stop from their own side, with their own external reality, independent of you. Okay? Who believes that? The mind-only school, and so do you. Okay? No. You know, I ask you, do you have to die? You say, yeah. You know? I ask you, does Buddhism teach you how not to die? Say, no, I never saw anybody, you know, practice really good and didn't die. You know what I mean? You believe that. And when I get up and say you don't have to die, you think, oh, maybe he's being figurative. Or something like that. You know what I mean? Okay. It's not that way. By the way, to see yourself not die is extremely difficult. It takes devout, pure practice your whole life. I compare it nowadays to learning concert piano. You'd have to put in the same effort You can. Everyone in this room could become a very good pianist if they really had a good teacher and if they took the lessons seriously and practiced enough every day. Almost everybody in this room, except Sykes maybe, could, you know, who has the least ear, okay, could learn to play piano like a concert pianist. But if you know how many people would actually do it, that's a big difference, okay? Everybody in this room can see emptiness directly. Everybody in this world, in this room, can reach tantric paradise in this life. But it takes just about the same effort as becoming a concert pianist. It takes about the same seriousness about it. And the odds that you'll do it are about that. See, I mean, you have the capacity, in the way that everyone here has the capacity to learn to play piano that well. But whether or not you'll take it seriously enough, soon enough, to do it is another question. Okay, that's a whole other question. But it's about the same amount of effort. You could do it. What I'm trying to say is, if you take the amount of effort it takes to see emptiness directly and not die in this life, and then you take the amount of good karma it takes to see someone not die in this life, even though you die in this life, they're very similar. Okay? To say that Buddhism doesn't prevent people from dying because I never saw anybody who didn't die is a fallacy. Because they're very similar effort. The effort to see a miracle occur and the ability to do a miracle and the ability to be there when a miracle is performed require very similar karma, very similar effort. By the time you see somebody walk across the lake, you're very close to doing it yourself. And to say that you haven't seen anybody walk across a lake so nobody can walk across the lake is just evidence of your lack of effort. You see? See what I mean? That you're not even close enough to see it, to see someone else do it. But they're very close. Yeah, it's a very close thing. And if you were like wavering the half and half between having enough karma to see it and having not enough karma to see it, the doubt itself is enough to stop the miracle. You see what I mean? In Tantra, that's the whole basis of Tantra. The doubt itself is enough to prevent it from happening. And then what happens? Like you walk like 2 feet on the water and then suddenly you doubt. No, seriously. And according to tantric theory, the karma of that moment of doubt is enough to stop the water from being hard. You see? And it would stop, and you would sink, and you'd say, oh, you know, help me. Okay? All right? So anyway, Magapa means that, okay? And again, in the sutra, they skip Shenlongs. Why? Because in this school, changing things really do end from their own side, by definition. Okay? Whether or not you're having a karmic rejection or blah, 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 we don't care. They would have done it anyway. The tree would have fallen in the forest anyway. Okay. Yeah. Last question. We got to have a break.
If you say the pen and the pen perceiver have the same karmic courses, end of last class. So, and now you say things end because their causes end.
Yeah.
Then that is the same cause as I have, and that then I don't see the difference between the middle and the mind only school because then it must be my projection. So there, I don't see the real.
Dido says, you know, at the end of the last class, you said that the pen and the eyeball and the eye consciousness, which sees the pen, in this school, come from the same karmic seed. And in fact, it's such a powerful connection, they even call it, quote, the same substance, the same stuff. The pen and the mind are the same stuff. But what it's a code word in this school for, they come from the same karmic seed. Is that the same as saying, I'm projecting the pen? And they'd say no. You see, there's a subtle difference. And struggling with that difference, struggling to understand the difference, is purifying your view of emptiness. You see what I mean? Struggling with these distinctions. What's the difference between saying, my eye and that pen came from the same karmic seeds, and saying that that pen is a projection of my karma? Is there a difference between those two? Are they subtly different? See, studying mind-only school helps you make your understanding of the middle way school much more pure, much more subtle. Yeah, you got to deal with those differences. There's a very beautiful example. What's the difference between saying that this pen's very nature depends on my projection forced on me by my past karma, and saying, on the other hand, that my eyeball and that pen have both been created by one karmic seed? Is there a difference between saying those two things? You have to deal with that, because one is emptiness and one's not. Okay? And you have to deal with that. and it helps you clarify your thinking about emptiness. It's very cool. It's very helpful. That's why we study the mind-only school. That's why Lord Buddha taught the mind-only school. Okay. Take a break. Come back in 10 minutes. We got two more left. They're easy. Okay. Hey. Also, I have the honor to welcome Captain Ten Hoop Cheng and his associate, Dr. Ho, who are here from Singapore. He's the former director of the center there, Amitabha Center, right, in Singapore, which is a very beautiful FPMT center of Lama Sopa. So I'd like to thank them and welcome them. Thank you. Okay, back to the truth of suffering. This is number 4, okay? Come on, Flax, you don't write the Tibetan anyway. I want you to make sure it's on his homework, okay? 4 of the 5. 3 of the last 4. Number 3 of the last 4. 4 of the whole 5. Say, Sumane.
Sumane.
Shiva.
Shiva.
Sumane.
Shiva.
Shiva. So is a very, very, very unusual word. Those of you who know Tibetan, don't mistake it for patience, which is bao, okay? This is kao. Okay? Kao sa na soda su means, it's a very, very rare word. Sumane means from the beginning of all time, for all time, since forever. Okay? Sumane means like from the very beginning of things, meaning beginningless in Buddhism, right? Okay. From the very beginningless of things? How's that? Okay? Something like that, Sumane. Shiva means peace or extinct. Okay? In Tibetan, it's the same thing. Like if you put out a fire, it's called Shiva. Extinguish a fire. But it also means peace. As you know, peace is a synonym for nirvana, right? Okay. So Sumane Shiva means Lord Buddha in the second turning of the wheel. When he went crazy, according to the mind-only school, right, said, nothing has any nature of its own, nothing grows, nothing ends, and everything has been from the very beginning in a state of peace or extinction. Okay? What does that mean, to be in a state of peace or extinction from the beginning? What's he talking about? You know, how is it like nirvana from the beginning? What does that mean when you say everything in the universe has been in a state of rest from the beginning? What does that mean? It means free of the mentally afflicted side of things. This is a code word in Buddhism. Everything in the universe is either on this side, called bhaksha in Sanskrit, or on this side. This side is all the mentally afflicted stuff in the world, meaning mental afflictions, the things that cause mental afflictions, and the things that come out of mental afflictions. Like what? Your body. Okay? Your mental afflictions themselves. This room, this school, is a product of mental afflictions. So it's on what we call the mentally afflicted side of things. 99.999% of your life is tied up, is invested in either active mental afflictions, or the consequences of your old mental afflictions, or the causes for your new mental afflictions. Okay? 99% of your world is that. We call it kune nyomo gichok. Say kune nyomo. Kichok. And it means the whole mentally afflicted side of stuff. And that's 99% of your world is that. Then there's what they call the totally pure side of things. The pure side of things. What is that? Your Dharma studies. Your understandings of emptiness. Your renunciation. Your compassion. Okay, the tiny little good side of things. Okay, so Buddhism says there's two sides of things. Two huge divisions. Okay, 99% of your day is over here. It's either mental afflictions, or triggering mental afflictions, or a consequence of your old mental afflictions. Okay? And then over here is this wimpy side, the little good thoughts you have, the little understandings of compassion, the little understandings of emptiness, the little study that you do, the 23 minutes of meditation you do. You know what I mean? It's all over on this side. Okay? And then Buddhism says there's two whole sides of that. Shiva here means extinct, meaning the bad side has stopped. Free of the bad side. Shiva here, peace means, or extinct means, free of the bad side of things. From the beginning, free of the bad side of things, free of the samsaric side of things, free of the suffering side of things. Now, did Lord Buddha mean it when he said everything was free of the negative side of reality, of the dark side of your existence? Did he mean it when he said everything is free of that? Oh, what school? Mind only school. Good question. Did he mean it? Yeah, we better check the three categories. Sal's right. In the mind only school, you got to go to those three categories. Okay. What's the first category? Kuntaks. Imaginary things. Are imaginary things, meaning mostly here, here's the clue, okay? Meaning unchanging things like empty space. Okay? Stuff like that. Are they generally free of mental afflictions?
Yeah.
We can say then they are free or extinct or peace from the beginning. From forever, they have been free of mental afflictions. So the Buddha was speaking literally when he said they are sumane shiva. They, from the beginning, they are in a state of peace. Okay? They are in a state of peace. If that's how you take it to mean. You see what I mean? And that's what it means. Okay. The sutra skips the next one. We'll come back to it. Okay. Third one, emptiness itself, yongdrup, totality. The third category of the mind-only school. Is it, generally speaking, free or devoid of suffering things, negative things?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay? Fits perfect. That's what I meant when I said everything was peace from the beginning, or extinct from the beginning. Okay? Bodhisattva, don't take it to be something wild like, you know, everything's free. Everything's free of mental affliction. Because the vast majority of things, which are in what? Category number two. Changing things. How much of your world is changing things? 99.99999999%. Opening lines. Okay? There's only three unchanging things in your whole experience. All the other zillion things are changing. Okay? And they're all suffering. Okay? 99.99, except for your glimpses of compassion, your glimpses of renunciation, your glimpses of understanding of emptiness, the 10 minutes you spent on your homework, okay? Everything else is suffering. Every other changing thing in your reality is suffering. You cannot call it peace from the beginning, okay? You cannot call it devoid of mentally afflicted stuff from the very beginning, okay? That's why the sutra skips it here too, okay? You can't say that about changing things. They are intimately connected with your mental afflictions. They are intimately connected with the chaos in your own mind. Your world is 99% a production of the chaos in your mind, the chaos in your mind, or new chaos being created. Okay? That's the truth of suffering. You live in it. Okay? Most of your world is that. All the things around you. Why? What's the evidence of it? The bad things is bad, and the good things is changing and getting worse. Okay? That covers everything. All right? That's the nature of samsara. So Lord Buddha didn't refer to the second category that way. Okay. Did you have a question? I didn't catch it. Ken said, wouldn't kuntaks, for example, imaginary bad things like a nightmare or something like that, wouldn't that be negative? Yeah. In the debate ground, you always say pelcher. Pelcher means what? For the most part, you cover your rear end with pelcher. Okay? You know, you say, for the most part, imaginary things are not involved with the act of suffering. Empty space is not suffering. See what I mean? It's just neutral. Okay, for the most part. How's that? Good point. And they do say pelcher. Okay. Last one. This is kind of long, but since it's the last one, you don't mind. Okay, say Rangshinki Yongsu Nyangenle Depa. Rangshinki Yongsu Nyangenle Depa. Okay. You know, most of you, nyangen ne depa. Nyangen means grief, trouble, problems. Okay, literally grief though. When someone dies, you get nyangen. Okay? That's called grief. Le depa means transcended or gone beyond grief. Gone beyond grief. That's the literal translation in Tibetan for nirvana. Okay? Nirvana. Those of you who study the diamond cutter, you know that there's two kinds of nirvana. One is the permanent ending of your mental afflictions because you saw emptiness directly, right? Nyundib malupa pambe so sotango. But what's the other one? What's natural nirvana? It's the emptiness of all things. You see, nirvana is also a code word for the emptiness of all things. Natural nirvana. Okay? That's not quite what we're talking about here. We're talking about a third kind. Okay? So don't get confused. We're not talking about the normal nirvana, which is stopping your mental afflictions forever because you saw emptiness directly. And we're not talking about the natural nirvana of things, which is their emptiness. Okay? We're talking about something slightly different. Okay? Rangshinki means by nature, by its very nature. Rangshinki means by its very nature. Yongsu means completely. Nyangen le depa means gone beyond all grief. Okay? So, the last thing that Lord Buddha said when he went crazy, according to the Mainoli school, during the second turn of the wheel, okay, was everything is beyond all grief, and that's their very nature. Completely beyond all grief. Everything is totally nirvana-sized already. Okay? And people say that, you know. People misinterpret. People take it in the wrong way, right? They say, oh, you're already in nirvana. You just have to recognize it. Meanwhile, you're dying. You're having root canals. You're having to put up with work year after year. And these guys are feel good, you know. Your real nature is pure. You just have to come to an understanding of it, you know. Yeah, let me do your teeth, you know. All right. It's not like that. You know it's not like that. You're experiencing it not like that. Okay? So what does it mean here? Grief here is a code word for the mentally afflicted side of things. Meaning everything in your world which is active mental afflictions or is created by mental afflictions, which means 99% of your world, or which is making new mental afflictions for new samsara and new suffering in the future. Okay? The whole bad side of things. Is called grief here. Okay. So did Lord Buddha mean it when he said everything is beyond that? What school, says Sal. I missed you last course, you know. Okay, what school? Mine only school. Then what's your next question? Which of the three categories are we talking about, man? Okay, let's go through them one by one. Are imaginary things like empty space or tashi, basically free of mental afflictions and those problems of mental afflictions? Yeah, okay? So Buddha was, that's what he meant. He meant what he said. He said, they are free of that condition. Imaginary things are free of that condition. Okay. Let's skip the second one. Let's go to the third one, okay? Can you say that emptiness itself is already devoid or free of mentally afflicted stuff? Yes. Yeah. It's just neutral old emptiness. It's the lack of a two-headed purple elephant in this room. Okay? For example. You know what I mean? So no problem. Now, Lord Buddha skips it in number two. Why? Because the rest of your world ain't free of mental things, right? So he kind of skips over that one. All right? He doesn't mention it. All right? He doesn't mention it. She said a very interesting thing. An imaginary thing could cause you mental afflictions like crazy. And in fact, all your mental afflictions come from one imaginary thing, which is what? Your belief in the self-existent thing, which is an imaginary thing, it doesn't exist at all. Yeah, in actuality, it's the root of all your mental afflictions. It's the very root of all of them. In general, they say, pelche. Majority. Okay. Meaning empty space and the fact that this room is not round and things like that. I mean, there are many facts. There are many truths constructs throughout the universe which have nothing to do with your mental afflictions. That's all. That's the main point. Yeah, but that particular construct has everything to do with your mental afflictions. Okay, yeah. Yeah, number four and number five are the same, okay? They're not much different. You're right. You're right. If somebody says, I don't see much difference between four and five, you're right. You're basically right. Okay? In this take, in this interpretation of them. Okay? Basically the same thing. But number one and number two are the same too, weren't they? I'm sorry, two and three. They were basically the same. I mean, if a thing cannot start by definition, it's not gonna stop by definition. Once you've established one, you've established the other. So actually, he's just rubbing it in. Okay?
It's not starting.
If a thing can't start by definition, it cannot stop by definition. See what I mean? If in this school, in mind only school, once something exists by definition, it's going to start by definition and stop by definition. Once a thing has started by definition, of course it stops by definition. Okay. One more last thing, which is a contradiction. Question number five on the homework, you do not have to answer it in Tibetan because we're too late. It's too late, okay? If you're interested in the Tibetan, I'll have it up on the... well, you can see it on the answer key, okay? You're going to get the answer key. But we don't have time to... I don't want to overload you, okay? I do want you to know this one. Okay, please repeat. Last thing, really. Rangi. Gyuken. Mene. Makewa. Dang. Magakpa. Okay. Now, in the text by Jetsun Kapa, very, very famous, okay? Somebody pulls out a quotation by Master Sangha. Okay? That quotation says, the last four characterizations, right? The last four of the five, which we studied tonight, doesn't grow, doesn't stop, has been in a state of peace since forever, and is in a state of nirvana by nature, total nirvana, or something like that. Okay, Master Asanga says, Lord Buddha meant those about all three categories. Okay, there's a famous quotation where Master Asanga says, Lord Buddha didn't mean to skip number two. And then there's this debate starts, you know, this fight breaks out. You know, somebody says, you know, Jetsun Kapa, I mean, the sutra is not there, it's missing. He never mentions changing things when he talks about the last four. Okay? And Jetsun Kapa says, he can't talk about the last four because they really do start from their own side. They really do stop from their own side. They really are mixed up with grief and they really are not extinction or peace. They're totally mixed up with mental affliction. Buddha couldn't have spoken of them in those terms. But here comes Master Sangha and says, Buddha meant all three. Okay, what did he mean? Okay, what did he mean? Do changing things start or not? Question. She said dependent on their own karma. Let's go to middleway school. I'm sorry, mind-only school. Yeah, depending on their causes. If their causes are there, they start. If the causes aren't there, they start. So can we say they don't start? In a sense, you can, if you characterize it how?
From their own side.
Yeah, from their own side. They don't start without their causes. Okay? So Master, you know, somebody's trying to explain, what did Master Asanga mean when he said Lord Buddha was talking about changing things when he said they don't start? He says, he meant they don't start if they don't have their causes, dumbhead. Okay, that's all. Easy. Okay. Did Lord Buddha... No, this is mind only. Yeah. Mind only school can say Lord Buddha did mean changing things also when he said things don't start, because when he said it about changing things, he meant they don't start without their causes. And that's what these words here mean. Rangi means its own. Gyuken means main causes and contributing causes. Main cause being the seed for the tree. Ken, or contributing causes, being the water, the soil, the, okay, stuff like that, the air. Right? So Gyuken means causes and conditions. Okay, so Rangi Gyuken means its own causes and conditions. Okay. Mene means If they're not there, okay, then what? Makewa. Meaning nothing starts. Sorry, nothing grows. Dung and magakpa, meaning what? You tell me. Nothing stops. Okay? If the conditions don't stop, if you don't stop your ignorance, what? You will continue to suffer. You will die. You will continue to get old. Okay? Things don't stop on their own. Things don't start on their own. Things don't start without their causes and conditions. Things don't stop without their causes and conditions. And that's what Lord Buddha meant when he said in the second turning of the wheel, what? Shenwangs, or dependent things, don't grow. And Shenwangs don't stop. He didn't say it directly, but he meant it, says Master Sangha. Okay? I admit he didn't talk about changing things when he said nothing starts and nothing stops. But he did refer to them, because what he meant to say was they don't start on their own and they don't stop on their own. And they're not mixed up with your mentally afflicted stuff on their own. They're due to causes. That's all. All four of the last four can be said to apply to Shenwangs, or changing things, if you take them to mean without their causes. Okay. They don't start without their causes. They don't stop without their causes. They're not free of mentally afflicted stuff from the beginning unless they're free of those causes. And you're not going to get to nirvana without their causes. That's all. Okay. So that's the last point. Master Asanga says, hey, Lord Buddha was talking about all three. He just didn't say it directly, okay? This is mind-only school. Master Asanga is representing the mind-only school. He is speaking. He's the spokesman for the mind-only school. What school is he really in? Middle way school. Okay. But he is the spokesman in history for the mind-only school. Unfortunately, he didn't belong to it. All right. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, because I didn't want to put too much on the board. There's one small point. Question number four on your homework. When it says, how does not growing and not stopping apply to emptiness in the mind-only school? Okay? We already talked about it. Emptiness doesn't grow. Emptiness doesn't stop. Emptiness comes into existence when the object it applies to comes into existence. Emptiness goes out of existence when the object it applies to goes out of existence. But the sutra don't say it that way. And I want you to know what the sutra says. The sutra here gets very weird. Okay? And Jetsun Kapa thinks it's so weird that it's necessary for him to give an explanation of it. All the sutra says here is that emptiness doesn't grow and emptiness doesn't stop because it continues in the time of changeless changelessness and up to the time of unshaking unshakability. Okay? That's exactly what the sutra says. Now Jetsun Kapa says, have mercy on me. You know, he says, come on, Lord Buddha, what are you talking about? What do you mean when you say, in the time of changeless changelessness and the time of unshaking unshakability, which you can read in the reading, it says, that's how long emptiness continues. Emptiness continues from the time of changeless changelessness up to the time of unshaking unshakability. And Jetsun Kapa says, come on, what's he talking about? You know, what kind of proof is that for the fact that emptiness doesn't grow or stop? Is that all you got to say about it, Lord Buddha? You know, it's going to continue from the time of changing changelessness, and it's going to continue up to the time of unshaking unshakability. Jetsun Kapa says, by the way, all the great commentaries from India and from China say these are code words. Okay? Changelessness refers to all the time that the thing had before, from the time it started. Like the pen, okay? The emptiness of the pen has existed from changeless changelessness in the sense that the emptiness of the pen has been there since the pen began. That's all. It's just a code word for since the beginning of the thing. And then when the sutra says, and it's going to continue up to the time of unshaking unshakability, it's talking about all the time until the end of the pen. That's all. Not a big deal. Prove to me that emptiness can't be described as something that grows and can't be described as something that shrinks and then disappears. Prove it. Then if you're going to speak from the sutra, you say, that's easy. Because it continues from the time of changelessness up to the time of unshakability. You know? And in the debate ground, that's enough. You see, and somebody say, are you crazy? What are you talking about? Oh, changing changelessness means since the thing started. Unshakability means until the thing stops. That's all. No big deal. Okay. But if Jetson Kapa doesn't come and help you with that, I mean, you're going to freak out, right? So that's on your homework. Okay. I mean, you got to know those code words. And he takes the time in his commentary to say, okay, you know, look, Lord Buddha's being a little obscure here. Here's what he means. Okay. That's all. And he's quoting some famous Indian and Chinese commentaries. Okay. Okay, cool. That's it. by the way, hang in there. This is not useless stuff, okay? This is the hardest class. I saved it for last. 7 years. I saved this, okay? And don't freak out. You will understand emptiness 10 times better if you get through this course than if you don't, okay? Besides that, you can show off mind-only school stuff, you know? All right? Okay. Where'd that guy go? Sorry?
In the middle.
Yeah, Punsok, you ready? Sorry. Question? No class Friday and no class Tuesday. Friday is Friday of this week is a Sechu. And by the way, it'll be out in New Jersey with Ken Rinpoche. And Tuesday, I forget why, there's Sojong. Tuesday is Sojong. So the next class of this class will be on Thursday. And then there will be every Friday night Wheel of Life. If you can come, come. It's incredible. You will never hear it again, I don't think, for a while. So it's the whole 12 links of dependent origination. Okay?
This is the end of Class 3. You have been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.